I started my day that promised to be a good one. I spent 3 hours exploring the areas around my tent, taking beautiful photos of the unmatched scenery of the Kaluts, a precious gift by Mother Nature to those who appreciate her. It was time for me to leave the imaginary city of Kaluts, a city with great potential for becoming a destination for responsible tourists and nature travelers. The most beautiful natural scenes should either be visited in the early hours of morning or sometime around sundown. I got up at 6 o'clock this morning and was able to take spectacular snaps of the natural beauties around here with this very camera. I have to say, I love Iran with all my being because of its very rich culture and its remarkably diverse natural beauties. It's time to go now. I have to pack up. I gotta put my tent back into my backpack and head out for the Kaluts again. This is my last day here. I can't stay here much longer because I'm running out of food and water. Not only the Kaluts, but the entire vast Lut region are considered as an invaluable natural museum in the world. All by itself, the Lut Desert is home to a world of numerous beauties, the like of which are scattered in different places across our planet. Without a doubt, it's among the most beautiful deserts on Earth. The Yalon Mega Dunes with their rare views, the Kaluts, the star-shaped dunes, the beautiful valleys in the heart of Lut, the hottest part of Dashtalut, which is Gandum Beryan, a large plateau covered in dark lava, the unique vegetation, including small trees named Saxols, the Martian or miniature mountains on the fringes of Lut, the central hole, the Dolphin Valley comprised of rock formations eroded by wind, Dashtakashk, and the plant and animal species endemic to Lut. Add to all that the villages with their unique desert architecture, people whose cultures go back 6,000 years. My GPS is telling me I've walked around 36 kilometers through the Kaluts. This is nearly the end of my trek into the Kaluts. Another very beautiful feature of the Kaluts of Kerman, in other words, the Kaluts of Shahdad, is the Nepka Forest Park. These very beautiful plants you see behind me here are in fact the trees that have formed this Nepka Forest Park. Only two species, salt cedars and saxols, which have grown here and created this beautiful and unique landscape. This area obviously looks different from others. The Nepka's Forest Park forms the vegetation on the fringe of the Kalut area. But this green patch fades away as you move from the cold mountains of Sirj to the hot, dry Kaluts. And in the heart of the Kaluts, there is hardly any vegetation at all. But Mother Nature has created a matchless forest in the area between the Sears Mountains and the Kalutes. This strange land formation I'm standing next to is not your simple hill. It is the world's biggest natural vase known as the Nebka. This phenomenon is called Nebka in the African Sahara, Shur Moro in the central areas of Iran, and Talagaz by those living on the eastern and southeastern plains of Iran. When sandstorms blow past the vegetation in this area, they leave behind some of the dirt and sand at the foot of these plants. When the wind blows, some of the sand and dirt is trapped in the trees and crashes to the ground, creating a mound over time. In order to survive, the trees use their long roots to absorb water and other nutrients buried underground. The dirt around the shrubs and trees contain more moisture. This relative moisture keeps the sand and earth in place around the plant. Of course, that leads to a portion of the trunk, branches, and leaves being buried, which in turn contributes to the solidification of the sand near the plant. Every natural Nebka vase is named according to the species it hosts. The Nebkas are called Talagaz or Talitol by the locals in this region. Another unique feature of Lut are these same Nebkas. They are the tallest natural vases in the world. The Nebkas of this kind have been seen in Africa too, but the ones in Africa are barely 3 meters tall. At their tallest, the Nebkas in Iran are 10 meters tall. Normally, Nebkas grow on flat surfaces. They best grow on moist land. The shape of the Nebka depends on the size, density, and growth rate of the host plant. In this Nebka forest, the dominant species is the salt cedar. My goodness, it looks more like a miracle. Just look how God instilled the hope for life in these salt cedars and saxols. When they're just small seedlings, winds dump massive amounts of sand onto them. But driven by their strong will to live, they continue to grow in order to survive. The battle between the wind and sand on one hand and these trees on the other has been going on forever. It's been around for millions of years. But what is really very important is that hope keeps everything and everyone alive. And these trees, because of their intrinsic sense of hope, the will for life, put their roots down and stand tall. They continue to grow as a means of survival. It's going to become stormy very soon. Desert storms are very dangerous. So what you need to do is find shelter somewhere or leave that area immediately. Fortunately, I'm very close to my next destination and I think I'm not going to run into any trouble. But I have to get going immediately or I'm going to get sand and dirt all over my body and stuff. My camera crew and I were taken off guard by the sudden change of weather and the subsequent sandstorm. One of the biggest powers of nature in a desert is the ability of sand and dust to penetrate each and every orifice during a storm, and our equipment was no exception. Sandstorms are among the biggest dangers of a desert. In some cases, such storms continue to blow for days and can cost nature travelers their lives. But there are other dangers lurking in other parts of this vast plain. Therefore, the best way to ensure a safe trip to Lut is to make the necessary arrangements with the relevant authorities in Kerman province and the city of Shahdad. From Shahdad, I had to walk around 250 kilometers to the west of the province, to a place only 15 kilometers away from Rafsanjan. Kerman is a province with limited water resources. Many of the deep wells in the province have dried up. But deep in the heart of Rafsanjan's crisis-hit nature, there is a canyon that sparkles like a diamond. You might be thinking this isn't Iran, that I'm speaking to you from another country. But you're wrong. This is our beloved Iran, and I'm now standing atop a scary deep canyon, the Raga Grand Canyon of Rafsanjan. Valleys and canyons are strange yet beautiful natural phenomena, and they become even more beautiful if their emergence is not the result of orogeny, rather if it's the result of thousands or millions of years of erosion by wind, sand, and water of flat plains. Raga Grand Canyon is one such ravine, a peerless, pristine valley in Kerman province. I was amazed at the view of the canyon from above. The pointed cones, the big and small columns carved out by erosion, the arcs, the partitions and wall-like strips were only a few of all the beautiful features of this canyon. Raga is around 20 kilometers long. Its width varies between 3 and 100 kilometers, and in some places it is around 80 meters deep. Walking on top of it could have been very dangerous. My goodness, it's really scary, but it's magnificent at the same time. At this point, I think it's around 70 meters deep from where I'm standing. If I fall into it, there will be nothing left of me. It's dangerous to be here because the earth here is very soft and can slide at any moment. So you'll have to keep a safe distance while walking along these beautiful walls. It's ruggedly beautiful indeed. You can get the most beautiful view of the canyon from up here, but every side of it offers its own unique beauty. What I'm really happy about is the fact that there is no construction work happening anywhere in a 20-kilometer radius. There are no roads. That's why this ravine has maintained its pristine status, and of course, the area around it too. My hope is that we can preserve this untouched ravine and its surroundings the way they are and leave them to the next generation, and they to the generation that comes after them, just like the way it looks now. I hope so. The canyon's geomorphology and its pristine environs made for beautiful scenery, and that had provided a good habitat for certain species of animals in and around it. This region and this gorge are so intact, they have become home to various species of birds, such as eagles that have built their nests in recesses high on the walls where they feel safe. I'm very excited and counting every minute for the walk on the bed of the canyon, but the best time to do it would be tomorrow because I don't have enough time for it today. Raga Canyon is a good destination for geologists and nature travelers venturing into the Lut. The vegetation, such as salt cedar trees in some parts of the canyon, made the canyon even more beautiful. From the bottom up, ravines look just as beautiful. I walked along much of Raga Canyon from above and captured many beautiful views of it, but it was now time to go down to the bottom of it. This part of the wall is solid. It's hard to walk on. It's very steep too, as you can see. You have to take a lot of care going down. my God. Yes. At the bottom, the canyon was beautiful and scary. I kept thinking its walls were going to come crashing down any minute. Walking at the foot of those majestic walls, I felt how little and weak I was compared to the canyon and to its creator. On one hand, the beautiful long natural statues, and on the other, the tunnel-shaped arcs carved into the walls were all astonishing. Statues chiseled by gravity pulling down the dirt and pebbles on the walls of the ravine. The view down here is simply breathtaking. The huge, majestic statues carved out on the walls of the canyon have taken thousands of years to be made. As loose earth from the top of the canyon cascaded down to the bottom over the years, it created these beautiful shapes on these walls. They are stunning. Some of them look like humans and others like certain animals. This canyon is just as beautiful down on its bed as it is from above. This dry tree over here, in fact, there are many others scattered across the ravine, floodwaters on the highlands and on the plains sweep them up along with some of the trees that grow at the mouth of the canyon in spring and dump them over here. It's a bizarre scene here. It's very dangerous to come here in the spring season because floodwaters are deadly. Ravine exploration is among the most interesting fields in nature traveling. There are many adventurers around the world who are in love with exploring valleys and canyons. But this field of sport comes with its own hidden dangers. The collapse of the walls or falling from the edge of a canyon's walls are among those dangers. But there's another more serious threat to the life of nature travelers, which is seasonal floodwaters caused by rainfall. Just take a look at what seasonal rivers have done to these walls. The water can be around 2 meters deep here at the time of a flood and can be fatal. Whenever I travel to a place like this, I study up on its weather and climate before I set out so I won't run into any trouble. So when it's raining, you better not be anywhere near the bottom of any ravine. Although Raga Canyon is very wide and the floodwaters flowing in pose a less serious threat, it is likely for torrential rain to come down in the nearby areas. And that means flash floods at a certain time during a day or night or a whole day. So at a time like that, you better not come here. Most nature travelers take all kinds of precautions prior to their adventure, but most of them don't pay much attention to the climate of the places they travel to. They don't take the weather forecasts very seriously. In 2005, 11 mountaineers from Razvin, with all their equipment and years of experience, entered Andres Canyon in Alborz province. But because they had ignored the weather forecast and the predicted rain, they had an accident. During rainfalls, valleys and canyons that offer no escapes are the most dangerous places in the natural world to be. In that year, heavy rain set off floodwaters in Andres Canyon, and unfortunately it took the lives of all 11 mountaineers. Therefore, the most important thing that natural explorers should take into account is the weather forecast, the difficulty of the route they are traveling on, and their mental and physical strength for the trip ahead. You can't put a price tag on the environment. All those who walk into nature speak of it as a cathartic experience and absorb massive amounts of positive energy. In my opinion, because the natural world is a manifestation of the greatness and beauty of God, I have walked a very long distance. I'm about to arrive at the end of the canyon. I'm going to have to get out of it before dark sets in, concluding another leg of my trip. It's very easy to pollute your environment, but that's not right. It only goes to show how irresponsible we humans can be. We have to take responsibility for the environment in our country and in the entire planet. We mustn't dump our garbage out in the open and instead send it to the recycling system. We must treat nature the same way we do our homes. Only then can we say we are committed to other humans, to the planet Earth, and to future generations. I'm approaching the end of my trip. I have no doubt that many of my countrymen and women are not familiar with the beautiful natural wonders of Kerman province. And many of the officials in the province don't seem to be aware of the great potential these natural wonders have as tourist destinations. In addition to its old history and culture, the province boasts unique natural features on a par with their counterparts in the rest of the world. In the developed world, development doesn't include building roads, hotels, and tourism centers in the heart of the environment. In the century we live in, development and progress is tantamount to the unconditional and responsible preservation of the environment, and sustainable development of the tourism industry can easily set in motion the big wheels of the country's economy. The environment in Iran is very fragile and sensitive, but with proper professional preservation and protection, by people and officials alike, it can turn into a big generator of jobs and revenues, provided that we appreciate what we have and do all we can to preserve what's left of Iran's untapped natural world. We should perish the thought of construction on it.
I'm sure you'll agree with me that Iran's deserts, with their varied and dramatic landscapes of canyons, yardangs, and their beautiful flora and fauna, are a unique destination for the demanding traveler to discover a wealth of exceptional and unspoiled views. And that's it for this week. Do keep in touch with us, and until next week, goodbye.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and He's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salamun alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, IRIB English radio listeners. Welcome to Islamic Upbringing, where we discuss problems, questions, and issues parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children. The answers are based on quotes from the Holy Quran and narrations from the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Today we have Brother Abdullah Al-Musawi here in the studio. He's an Islamic researcher at the Hawza Al-Almiyya of Qom. Brother Abdullah, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the program.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and thank you for having me.
Glad to have you here today. So, we were talking about achieving true happiness with our children. Where did we leave off?
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytanir la'inur rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajah. So we were talking about talking with our children, getting to understand their feelings, to know what they're going through, yeah. And conveying that feeling back to them, making them think that we know exactly what is going through with them. Yeah. Now, today I want to talk about something also along the lines of respecting the child's feelings and emotions. These days we have a lot of children that they are extremely angry. Anger to the extent that they yell at their parents, they say awful things to their parents like, I hate you, I don't like you. And you can even see that this trend in the movies.
Yeah, right?
They betray that in the movies as well. This kind of upbringing didn't exist back in the day.
The type of audacity.
So we used to have a lot of fear from our parents that we would never speak back to them.
Because back then, they were more, you know, firm with their kids, right? That's one of the points, at least.
One of the points, yes, they were firm with the kids. And the environment was different. The time was different as well, right? Yeah. We grew up in an environment where we only saw our parents.
Yeah.
And even the school had regulations and everything else. Now everything is corrupted. So automatically children who are raised in this environment, they will be automatically, I wouldn't say corrupted, but it will brush on them.
Yeah.
Right? This kind of behavior where it's okay, you can talk to anybody. So back in the day, for example, we had immense respect for our teachers and we used to fear them, revere our teachers, for example. Now, no one cares. So any human being is normal, yet alone your mother and your father. And that's why you see the Quran.
We're all human, huh?
Exactly. That's why you see the Quran so much emphasizing the fact that we should not even talk back to our parents. We should not say anything. Even وَلَا تَقُلْ لَهُمَا أُفٍ. أُفٍ is not even a word. It's just a gesture that you do, sound that you make with your mouth, which is just blowing air out of frustration. Allah says, don't say that. Yeah. That's how serious the Quran takes it. But now we have this problem where we have a child who's angry. He's yelling at his dad or his mom, calling them names. To some extent, some kids, they might even hit their parents.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
The violence gets out of hand.
Yeah, so I've seen a lot of kids, for example, they hit their parents. And the parents, and here what we say is that when a child is angry, it's also a cry for help, right? And so we say to the parents that you can go about dealing with this child in two ways.
Yeah.
You could either yell at him, scream at him, threaten him, tell him, how dare you? Like you said, how dare you have the audacity to talk to me? I'm your father. Next time, don't you dare like this. Yeah. And if you get angry next time, I will do this to you. So you kind of reply anger, with a threat, with a punishment.
Yeah, you can't fight fire with fire, right?
Exactly. That will just make it a lot worse.
Okay. Let's take a short break and we'll be right back.
When I was born, the first words that I had heard were the words of Allah being whispered through my ear. And as I felt Allah's presence in my soul, that day Islam took me in its fold.
we're back here with Brother Abdullah. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing on IRIB English Radio. So, Brother Abdullah, we were talking about the rage that children are having these days, you know, and how they're expressing it to their parents.
Mm-hmm. So, we can see this trend where the children are either angry with his parents, or sometimes he could be just angry with one of his siblings. Like, he convey the same message to his brother, to his sister, I hate you. All right? And then you see the parents themselves also threatening. If you say that next time, I'll do this and this to you. Right? Don't you dare say that. Be more respectful. This and that.
Yeah.
We don't understand what's going on in the child's mind, what he's going through. Right? For example, you say to them, okay, so you got, he, if he got angry with you, look, okay, so you got angry with me.
Yeah.
First you tell them, like, I know what's happening with you. You're angry.
Yeah.
So I must have done something that hurt you. What's hurting you? What happened? What did I say that actually made you like this? So then the child feels more, I was like, oh, okay, so he actually wants to talk to me. He wants to express
this,
his feelings.
This rage comes from a lack of the parents listening to them. Because if they had, you know, a proper communication, with their parents, then they wouldn't really, you know, raise their voice. They wouldn't, you know, like you said, cry for help.
Yeah. Yeah. So instead of just threatening and telling them off, you say, look, I understand you're angry. Let's talk about it. We'll make sure it doesn't happen next time.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So you control the situation and you control their anger. But if we, just like you said, reply fire with fire, we're just going to burn everything.
Yeah.
There won't be any solution happening with between us. And so this is one of the major issues that now parents face when it comes to children and their anger. And they don't know how to deal with anger. And so a lot of people end up taking the kids to psychiatrists and therapists. And sadly, some of them, they even go on medication. They put them on medication.
When the problem is, you know, it's at home. It's
exactly at home. The child needs attention, for example. The child is going through something. He's not being heard. He's not being understood. No one knows his feelings. No one trying to solve his problem. It could be something, you know, sometimes with kids, it could not be the problem related to the house. It could be somewhere else. It could be, for example, in school. He's bullied at school.
Yeah, yeah.
If he's bullied at school or he's going through problems with his friends, he comes to the house, he's full of anger, for example. He will blow up at the first thing.
Of course.
So we need to understand, like, what's making him angry?
Yeah.
What's behind all of this?
The issue is communication. If he's not heard, then, you know, he'll express it in different ways, in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
And usually inconvenient.
Exactly. So we need to basically understand and get in the psyche and in the mind of the child.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we can lose the child himself. So he gets angry, and what we do as parents to calm his anger, I will give you the phone. I will let you do this.
Yeah.
I'll let you
distract them.
So distraction is not the best solution. Distraction is like
probably the worst solution.
The worst solution.
Ignoring the problem.
Exactly. So it's when you have a disease and you're feeling the pain, and all you're getting is painkillers. It could be cancer, God forbid.
Yeah.
And you're just taking painkillers, and in no time, you find cancer taking all over you, and it's death.
Yeah.
Right. It could be deadly.
And it's crazy how widespread this thing is. You know, like this, the numbing or the distracting from this major issue that you have in so many households.
Mm.
Okay, let's take a break and we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam said, Allah will be merciful to his servant for his intense love for his child.
And we're back here with Brother Abdullah Al-Musawi. We're listening to Islamic Upbringing on IRIB English Radio. So we were talking with Brother Abdullah.
We were just talking about how to deal with children if they have this anger problem.
Yeah.
So we said we need to understand what's the reason behind it,
yeah,
and tell them that we are fully aware of their anger and we recognize it, rather than try to threaten them or bribe them or whatever, just to keep them quiet.
Of course.
At the same time, that when we look at children, we find out that the younger the child is, the more he's in need of someone to understand his emotions. Because as they get older, they can convey and express their feelings through words, yeah, or at least through actions. The younger they are, the harder for them.
The more vulnerable.
Yeah, the more vulnerable and the harder for them to convey their problem. And for example, if a child has a balloon, right, and it blows up, right, something that he loves dearly. He's, yeah, like, you know, this balloon, this football or something.
Or the common example of the ice cream falling.
Yeah, exactly. Or something like holds values to him.
Yeah.
So he drops it, like the ice cream cone, yeah, and then he said to him, it's okay, don't cry, I'm going to get you another one.
Yeah.
You're not recognizing the problem here.
Yeah.
You're not recognizing his sadness. You're not recognizing his grief.
It feels like you're belittling his emotion. Like, he has a right to be upset.
Exactly.
He hasn't seen the world like you have. This is like the biggest thing he's ever held. Like, it's an ice cream cone to him.
Yeah, yeah. So first thing you need to recognize, like, you told him, look, I understand that this balloon, for example, meant a lot to you. It's very special to you.
Yeah.
And I know you're sad because of it. So once you tell him that, he feels comfortable that someone knows his feelings.
Yeah.
And then you try to give him pieces of comfort. Like, for example, even when someone dies, for example, when we go to comfort them and give them sympathy, like, we tell them, like, look, I know what you're going through. I know it's painful. I know it's sad. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala give you patience.
Yeah, sympathize with them. You know, feel.
Yeah, sympathize with them. Otherwise, it's just like if you just go there and just you read the Fatiha and you leave, you haven't done nothing. But once a person feels that you're actually sympathizing with them, that makes a lot of difference. So with parents and kids, exactly the same thing. So we said the younger they are, the more attached they are to things that makes a lot of sense to them that me and you might find stupid.
We were all kids one day. Yeah. So
no, but that's a problem. We were all kids. If we remember that, then a lot of our problems will be solved.
But that's the thing. We're looking at them, and they're a reflection. I mean, they're our children. So
no, but what I'm saying is, like, a lot of parents, for example, they forget that they were children.
Exactly.
Right. So they forget that, for example, a stupid thing to a child, it's so important.
It means a lot to him.
It means that a lot. The same thing that it meant to me and you when we were kids, right?
Yeah.
That our parents find it stupid.
Yeah.
Now, it is our turn. But a lot of parents are like, oh, no, that's stupid. I'll just get you another one. It's just leave it.
Toy.
Yeah. To the child, it's not as stupid. For example, if the toy breaks, he doesn't want a new one.
Yeah, wants that one.
Yeah, maybe if you work on fixing it, he feels much better than getting a new one because of the attachment.
Okay.
So therefore, if you want to summarize what we've been talking about when it comes to making a child happy, is in fact recognizing his feeling, getting down to his level, understanding what makes him tick, and feeling how he feels and seeing the world through his eyes. And when he sees that you have this connection with him, that itself just gives him a sense of happiness rather than you trying to make it up with something that is completely artificial.
Yeah. Well, that's all for now. Thank you, Brother Abdullah, for sharing these great tips with us. Truly, truly enlightening. So thank you to our dear listeners as well for joining us on the program today. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please contact us via email at englishradio@irib.ir or on the social media platforms, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We have all of them. The handle is Call of Islam Radio. That's Call of Islam Radio. Or visit our website at www.parstoday.com. Thank you, and we'll see you next episode. Thank you, and fi amanillah.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The United States and China have in recent months escalated their war of words. This time, China says its sovereignty is at risk, cautioning the U.S. against sending the wrong signals.
We urge the U.S. to strictly abide by the One China principle and the three joint communiques. The U.S. should act and speak cautiously on the Taiwan issue and refrain from sending wrong signals to separatist forces in Taiwan to avoid seriously damaging Sino-U.S. relations and peace and stability in the Taiwan Strait.
The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman warned that his country has no room for compromise on issues involving its core interests, including its territorial integrity. Wang also noted that Taipei is an inalienable part of China's territory, and the issue is purely China's internal affair, and that Beijing won't allow any external interference. He was responding to these comments U.S. President Joe Biden made during a CNN town hall Q&A.
I don't want a cold war with China. I just want to make China understand that we are not going to step back. We are not going to change any of our views.
So are you saying that that the United States would come to Taiwan's defense if China attacked?
Yes, we have a commitment.
What the United States says, if the American president puts in the minds of China, of the Taiwanese independence activists and independence politicians, the idea that Taiwan could, for example, make a declaration of independence, China would act on that. And I don't know what the United States could or on its own, on the terms of its own terms of China policy since the last 50 years, should do or could do to prevent China from acting on that.
The U.S. has recently deployed a fleet of B-1 bombers and 200 airmen to its notorious base at Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean, the first such deployment to the island in 15 years. The base at Diego Garcia has a dark history. The U.S. has used the base to launch airstrikes in Iraq and Afghanistan, and it's said to have been used as a black site to interrogate and torture victims of the CIA. China considers Taiwan as part of its territory and has warned against any of its independence bids. Tensions escalated recently over Chinese military flights as well as increased U.S. military support for Taiwan. Just 2 weeks ago, U.S. media reported that American forces had been secretly training Taiwanese troops for months. China has sovereignty over Chinese Taipei, and under the One China policy, almost all world countries recognize that sovereignty. The U.S., too, recognizes Chinese sovereignty over the island, but has long curtailed Taipei in an attempt to unnerve Beijing. The United States, which backs Taipei's separatist president, also continues to sell weapons to the island in defiance of Beijing and in violation of its own official policy.
What they call a strategic ambiguity in American policy. They like to keep Taiwan as in some kind of de facto independent status, but they have recognized de jure that it's one country and Taiwan is a part of China.
China has also denounced the recently clinched AUKUS pact between Australia, the United Kingdom, and the U.S., under which the trio is expected to make a fleet of nuclear-powered submarines. Beijing argues that the pact threatens regional stability and poses nuclear proliferation risks. U.S. President Joe Biden has repeatedly vowed to re-engage with the international community, marking a departure from his predecessor Donald Trump's foreign policy. In case of China, however, it appears that he's following in the footsteps of Donald Trump's America First stance against Beijing.
Abdulbari Atwan, a well-known author, has described the recent highlights in Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon as an American Zionist conspiracy to ignite a civil war in the region. Atwan stated that the U.S. Zionist conspiracy to create a sectarian conflict in the region will fail. He said, sectarian conflicts have been created with the aim of securing Israel's interests and stealing Lebanese gas. But this sedition will not go ahead, and if it goes on, the U.S. and its allies will surely be defeated. In fact, the axis of resistance in the region has so far managed to oppose Western, namely United States and Israel, interests in the region and foiled their plots. Members of the axis of resistance include Iran, Syria, and Lebanon's Hezbollah, and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad and Hamas, to name a few. The U.S. has attempted to weaken the resistance axis by hatching different plots, such as causing instability and wars in the region for years. However, the resistance has always been ready to properly respond to these threats. For instance, Washington has always sought to keep Israel's enemies at one another's throat so that they could not give Israel trouble. But the resistance front has time and again proven that it will not allow the Tel Aviv regime to commit crimes with impunity, as it has launched retaliatory attacks against Tel Aviv, which have exposed the vulnerability of the regime's entities in the region. Israel's constant violations of Lebanese airspace are also a source of instability. This has been seen as a constant provocation by Israel, mainly directed at the resistance movement Hezbollah. Meanwhile, the U.S. has also been accused of creating an atmosphere of instability. On the one hand, it has imposed sanctions on Lebanon, which prevents foreign investment in the country. It has even opposed the delivery of fuel shipments from Iran, is in an emergency mode due to a lack of fuel. Meanwhile, the U.S. ambassador has stirred controversy by making anti-Hezbollah statements, so much so that a judge ordered a media ban on her. The trip by the number three diplomat at the State Department, Victoria Nuland, to Lebanon, also proved to be controversial. Her purpose was to meet government officials and representatives to discuss Lebanon's reforms and elections. The question that arises is, what does she have to do with Lebanon's elections? Nuland was famously accused of promoting regime change in Ukraine, backing the Maidan protesters and opposition, which showed how the Ukrainian opposition is being manipulated by Washington. Coincidentally, while she was there, the deadly protest in Lebanon erupted, which resulted in the death of several Lebanese. What is for certain is that the popularity of the resistance in the region will be a severe challenge for the enemies, who are hatching plots against them, specifically Israel and the U.S. The face-off between the Venezuelan government of Nicolas Maduro and the opposition led by Juan Guaido has put Caracas in a years-long political impasse and economic crisis. Several rounds of talks in recent years have been futile, and the two sides have failed to reach a consensus. In August, the Venezuelan government and the opposition began a new round of negotiations in Mexico City aimed at overcoming Venezuela's political and economic crisis. The dialogue was mediated by Norway. However, the latest developments have hampered the process of a possible settlement. Venezuela's government has decided to suspend the talks after Cape Verde extradited a Venezuelan envoy named Alex Saab to the United States on money laundering charges on Saturday. Saab was arrested in Cape Verde under a U.S. arrest warrant in June 2020 when his plane stopped there to refuel. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro lashed out at the U.S. for what he called kidnapping of an envoy to face an American court.
Saab was taken yesterday, skirting over everything. A plane arrived, assassins, hitmen came down. They sought him out and they removed him with blows from the jail he was held. They took him without advising lawyers, the family, nobody. A kidnapping by the United States government of an international diplomat.
Jorge Rodriguez, who heads the government's negotiating team, described the government's decision as a deep expression of protest over the brutal aggression against Alex Saab. He also called on Washington to release Saab immediately.
Venezuela is alerting the world that the life of Alex Saab is in danger. It's in the hands of judicial system that is directed at harming Venezuela. And we demand his immediate release by the American government.
The U.S. charged Saab in 2019 in connection with a bribery scheme and sanctioned him for allegedly orchestrating a corruption network that allowed Caracas to profit from a state-run food subsidy program. However, Saab's lawyers have denied the U.S. charges as politically motivated.
This is absolutely a political attack on Venezuela, and it is a kidnapping. This shows just how far in lawlessness the United States is willing to go and how much they are determined to attack Venezuela.
Meanwhile, U.S.-backed opposition figure Juan Guaido reacted to the decision to suspend the talks, accusing the government of evading the nation's problems. Caracas aims to ease U.S.-led sanctions on the Venezuelan nation, while the opposition says it aims to use the talks to secure guarantees for regional elections to be held in the fall. Venezuela descended into political turmoil after U.S.-backed opposition figure Juan Guaido unilaterally declared himself as the interim president in January 2019. He claimed that Maduro's re-election in 2018 was fraudulent. Then, United States refrained from recognizing Nicolas Maduro's re-election in 2018, imposed sanctions on the crisis-hit economy of the Latin American nation, and froze millions of dollars of Venezuelan money in the U.S. bank account. Washington has been using sanctions as leverage to overthrow the legitimate government of Maduro in what has been termed economic terrorism. Venezuela has faced chronic shortages of food and medicine as a result of U.S. sanctions, resulting in years of political and economic crisis.
Well, this is exactly what the U.S. government wants to prevent. And this may be also an effort on their part to sabotage even the negotiations going on in Mexico. That how can the talks continue under in this situation? What needs to be condemned and denounced is depriving any country of food and medicine, particularly in this time of pandemic.
While freezing assets and slapping illegal sanctions on countries that refuse to submit to Washington's hegemonic policies is nothing new, the U.S. sanctions have directly targeted Venezuelan people. Experts say the sanctions, used as a tool for regime change, have no effect on the stability of Maduro administration, but further complicate the socioeconomic condition of ordinary people amidst a full-blown crisis. Seven people were killed and 60 others injured after a peaceful protest in the Lebanese capital, Beirut, turned deadly on Thursday. It all began as heavy gunfire erupted during a rally of Hezbollah and ML movement supporters to protest against a judge probing the last year's Beirut port explosion as they accuse him of political bias and being swayed by the U.S. Hezbollah Secretary General Syed Hassan Nasrallah has accused Judge Tariq Bitar of politically targeting officials in his investigation. The Beirut port blast in August 2020 killed over 200 people, injured around 6,000, and left some 300,000 homeless. It also caused further damage to Lebanon's already fragile economy. Following the unrest, Hezbollah and the ML movement in a joint statement said the attack was aimed at creating civil strife. Hezbollah initially blamed the attack on the Christian Lebanese Forces Party, led by Samir Jaja. Later, reports from Lebanon's Interior Ministry confirmed that the far-right Lebanese Forces Party had started the Thursday shooting in Beirut. Hezbollah accused the Lebanese Forces Political Party of taking orders from the United States and being financed by some Arab countries. The Lebanese president vowed to hold accountable the perpetrators.
What happened will be the subject of security and judicial follow-up, and I, for my part, will ensure that the investigation reaches the truth of what happened in order to hold those responsible and instigators to account.
Aoun described the incident as painful and unacceptable. So far, Lebanese authorities have arrested 19 people in connection with the violence.
Well, the uproar and instability and confusion in the region are directly attributable to the United States, to the apartheid entity of Israel, and to the repressive and repulsive monarchy of Saudi Arabia. So the whole issue is basically outsiders doing their best to destabilize the region.
Israel has once again taken advantage of civilian aircraft covers to conduct airstrikes on Syria, a potentially dangerous move that could have resulted in an enormous tragedy. Israeli warplanes carried out strikes on the Palmyra area in the eastern countryside of Syria's Homs province. A Syrian soldier was killed and three others wounded in the attack.
They can commit crimes with impunity and feel that they have enough political cover because of their influence on the governments of the world, and which consequently influence the United Nations. They're backed by the United States, and their influence over the U.S. government and U.S. foreign policy is tremendous. They have more influence over U.S. foreign policy than U.S. citizens do.
A top Russian commander said in a statement that Syria decided not to use its air defense system to counter the Israeli attack, as two passenger airliners were flying in the area at the time. Israel has repeatedly used civilian aircraft as a shield against Syrian air defense systems in its aggression against the Arab country. In February 2020, an Airbus A320 with 172 passengers on board was forced to make an emergency landing at the Russian-operated Hamamim Air Base during an Israeli attack. Back in 2018, Israel had to apologize for using a Russian reconnaissance aircraft as a shield during an attack, causing a Syrian S-200 surface-to-air missile to shoot down the Russian aircraft instead and kill 15 Russian and 2 Syrian service members. Iran's ambassador to the Vienna-based international organizations has criticized the International Atomic Energy Agency for its lenient approach toward Israel's nuclear program. Kazem Gharibabadi said silence and negligence toward the issue send negative signals to the members of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. He expressed regret that the agency considers being outside the treaty as being exempt from any commitment and criticisms. He was responding to comments IAEA Chief Rafael Grossi made in an interview. When asked about the agency's focus on Iran's nuclear program and silence about that of Israel, Grossi argued that Tehran is a member of the NPT and must subject its nuclear sites to inspections and verifications, while the Israeli regime hasn't even signed the treaty.
Well, the UN does not condemn Israel because Israel has been very effective with their foreign policy and their intelligence operations, infiltrating every other government on the planet. It's because of this that Israel can influence these governments to not take action against them, either directly or via the United Nations. And that's why Israel gets away with this with no consequences.
Israel, which pursues a policy of deliberate ambiguity about its nuclear weapons, is estimated to have hundreds of nuclear warheads in its arsenal. The regime has refused to allow inspections of its military nuclear facilities or sign the NPT. The Israeli regime, which is West Asia's only possessor of nuclear arms, has so far assassinated 7 Iranian nuclear scientists. But Iran's calls on the international community to hold the regime responsible for its crimes have fallen on deaf ears. Iran says the silence will embolden the regime to expand its aggressive measures.